This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
While most video surveillance solutions capture and store hours of nothing, CUDA Eye by Barracuda Networks only captures video when something happens. Once captured on camera, the video evidence is immediately encrypted and sent to the cloud for safe storage and easy retrieval from any web browser or mobile device. With CUDA Eye, there's no network configuration or software to install. Just plug one or more cameras into your network to better protect your business. Don't get caught with nothing. Do something about it. Check out CUDAEye.com. That's CUDAEye.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The White House changes course. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, October 16th. Glad you're with us. Here's what's up this hour.
President Obama will be extending the 14-year-old war in Afghanistan, citing a fragile security situation. We'll have analysis.
Torrential rain in parched northern Los Angeles County has led to flash flooding and mudslides as deep as 5 feet. A portion of the five had to be shut.
In sports, it'll be the Mets and Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Plus, the American League Championship Series begins today between the Royals and Blue Jays.
And thanks to lower oil prices, the cost of an airline ticket has fallen, but why doesn't it feel that way?
The airlines have done something very clever. Every year they raise their fees. So fees for checked luggage, fees for things like preferred boarding, meals. So the net effect, according to a new survey, is that we're actually probably going to be paying the same amount as we were last year and maybe even a little bit more.
Travel expert Christopher Elliott explains the exhausting fee increases that eat into lower ticket prices. He's here in about 20 minutes. In a major policy reversal, President Obama has announced he will extend the 14-year-old war in Afghanistan, calling it a modest but meaningful adjustment to winding down the American presence in Afghanistan. The president said Afghan forces were not yet as strong as they needed to be, given a very fragile security situation, and the U.S. will maintain a force of 9,800 through most of 2016. That effectively means he'll be handing off the war to the next president. Here's Defense Secretary Ash Carter.
Our mission now on a day-to-day basis is train, advise, and assist and counterterrorism, and only to undertake other kinds of operations, either to protect our own forces or in an extremist situation.
Mr. Obama had previously aimed to withdraw all but a small U.S. embassy-based force in the capital, Kabul, before he leaves office in January 2017. But under the new plan, troops will be drawn down to 5,500 starting sometime in 2017. And will be based at four locations, Kabul, Bagram, Jalalabad, and Kandahar. Well, the president's decision was welcomed by Army General John Campbell, who leads the U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan, saying it serves notice to our common enemies. Their war against the legitimate Afghan government, the Afghan people, the international community, and our shared values remains futile. It's time for them to lay down their arms and enter the political process. More now from Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. She's on the T-Mobile hotline. Molly, what does this all mean?
So not only does this mean that he doesn't achieve his goal of bringing all the troops home by the end of his administration, but it essentially means that he'll hand off the war to the next president in the same way that he inherited the war from President Bush. Now, obviously, it should be noted that the war that he inherited is very different than the one that's being handed over to the next president. I mean, the force presence that we'll have, even with the 5,500, is really a fraction of what the American force levels were at the height of the war in Afghanistan. But it will be left to the next president to sort of set their course, set their strategy, and hope that they'll be more successful where he wasn't able to achieve that goal of ending the war.
We're speaking with Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. Her piece is called America's Longest War Just Got Longer. We're talking about the adjustment that the Obama administration has made to Afghanistan and its policy there. All right, so how, at this point, can he still be talking about drawing down to 5,500 troops like following 2016? I don't understand how you can predict that far ahead when he's already had to make adjustments.
Well, that certainly has been a criticism, especially from members of Congress, that we've seen when the president first announced the timeline for withdrawal. They suggested, you know, the criticism was you're forecasting our plans to the enemy, but also, you know, if you're setting a timeline for withdrawal, then you're really relying on politics rather than the situation on the ground, which is always going to be changing. Now, the Obama administration, sort of on defense there, has retorted, you know, we've always suggested that we would be flexible based on the situation on the ground, based on the candid advice of our top military officials, although Obama obviously had been pretty adamant about bringing the troops home by the time he left office. So that 5,500 number, this was sort of the golden ticket number that they produced for what would be sufficient to hold on to any gains that may be made by the Afghan security forces in order to support them and also protect the U.S. forces that are already there. And they've been very specific that the mission that will remain for these troops is going to be counterterrorism, as well as continuing to train, advise, and assist Afghan partners. Now, when you declare a war over, you know, as the Obama administration did with Afghanistan, you know, they suggested it was the end of the combat mission. But Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook really struggled to distinguish between counterterrorism and combat, what the difference really is. So I think it's pretty clear that the U.S. combat mission, however the administration sort of wants to frame it, is continuing in Afghanistan.
All right. So is it framed in such a way that these 9,800 troops that will be there will not be, I don't know, firing weapons of some kind? Is that sort of the semantics at work here?
Well, that's the way they're framing it. That is certainly the semantics, but they also suggested that, you know, of course, commanders aren't limited in any way to whatever actions they need to take to not only defend U.S. troops, but to pursue this mission of ensuring that Afghanistan doesn't, again, become a haven from which terrorists could launch attacks on the U.S., and also continuing to shore up Afghan partners. So that really leaves them a lot of room. So despite Obama saying, you know, the war in Afghanistan is over, the combat mission is over, announcing policy changes about what situations in which drone strikes could be used, you know, only if American forces are being directly threatened. There's a lot of ambiguity. They left themselves a lot of wiggle room for essentially, you know, continuing U.S. combat operations in Afghanistan. And we don't have a timeline yet for that 5,500. Now, I do think they're hesitant to use a timeline because of some of the criticism that's been given, and they want to leave themselves flexibility to adjust. But that also means that those 5,500 troops, as of early 2017, that number, as far as we know, that's indefinite.
Does the role then for these 9,800 troops that'll stay behind change? Are they going to be charged with something else now?
Well, they insist that, and Obama used this phrase literally, I think he used it about three or four times during his announcement, which was not very long. The mission has not changed. The mission will not change. The twofold mission of counterterrorism and supporting Afghan security forces, and that's what they emphasized. But it's hard to see that if you're going to be maintaining this troop level, how you can really put strictures on them when it comes to combat or offensive operations if you want them to be successful. So that's the sort of tension, I think, that we need to keep an eye on looking forward.
Anybody place a guess, Molly, as to what percentage of gains in Afghanistan have been lost since the troop withdrawals?
We can sort of look at the facts on the ground, and there's been a sort of prolonged spike in violence in Afghanistan. The UN announced just last week, I believe, that the Taliban, that their hold, their influence at least, is wider than it has been since 2001, since the war began. Obviously, we saw them temporarily take over the city of Kunduz. And we also saw the controversy over the U.S. strike against the Doctors Without Borders hospital there. All of these instances, these setbacks, which they do admit are setbacks,
yeah,
you know, have occurred in the context of the withdrawal.
Thanks, Molly. Molly O'Toole, politics reporter at Defense One. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack, when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 1313 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 1313.
Thanks for being with us. The 2016 presidential candidates in both parties are burning through their cash faster than in prior elections, despite the expanded role of super PACs that have collectively raised hundreds of millions of dollars to back their campaigns. This morning's Mike Gavin has a look at some new disclosures.
At least two GOP candidates have dangerously low accounts. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul's report shows that he has less than $2 million, and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has a little more than a million. Jeb Bush has $10.3 million left, less than rivals Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, and Dr. Ben Carson. If cash is the indicator, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's $260,000 could send him to the exit next, along with former Virginia Governor Jim Gilmore with $34,000 in the bank. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. High end of the spectrum, by the way, Hillary Clinton with $33 million cash on hand. Bernie Sanders, number two, with $27 million. At the low end, George Pataki, $14,000. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to the Treasury Department, says Congress needs to act soon or the government will be dangerously close to being unable to pay all of its bills. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew says the government will exhaust its emergency cash management measures by November 3rd and risks running out of cash shortly thereafter if the federal borrowing limit isn't raised. The latest high-stakes political ritual over the nation's borrowing limit is unfolding at a moment when congressional Republicans find themselves distracted by leadership turmoil. Ohio Governor John Kasich is calling for cutting taxes for individuals and businesses while also balancing the federal budget, offering a comprehensive fiscal plan as he tries to jumpstart his presidential campaign in the crowded GOP field.
I will immediately put us on a path to a balanced budget, and I will get it done within 8 years.
Kasich's tax plan would cut the top individual income tax rate to 28% from 39.6%. The family of the still-missing first wife of infamous millionaire and murder suspect Robert Durst has taken a step toward a wrongful death lawsuit against the real estate heir. The brother of Kathleen McCormick Durst has filed a petition to become administrator of her estate so he can commence action against Robert Durst. James McCormick's attorney says Durst murdered the missing woman, and it can be proved. Europe's migrant crisis took a dark turn late yesterday when an Afghan man seeking to cross from Turkey was shot dead by Bulgarian border guards shortly before the EU and Turkey struck a deal to stem the refugee influx. The killing is thought to be the first of its kind in Europe's worst refugee crisis since World War II. And the quietest place on Earth isn't a library or a well-insulated basement. It's a chamber in Microsoft's audio lab. The room on the company's Redmond, Washington campus has been verified by Guinness as being the quietest place on Earth. The chamber is lined with wedge-shaped sound absorbers that take any vibration in the air and dampen it, and it's separated from the rest of the building so things like footsteps and other vibrations don't leak in.
And why don't we have this stuff, say, in our bedrooms at night to sleep in peace?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? That would be great. I live near a train station. I hear that train all night long.
You got to get Microsoft on the phone.
I know.
Give me some of those wedge-shaped sound absorbers, please, on the double. Sleep till Monday. 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Good Friday morning. Time now for a travel update, and it's brought to you by La Quinta. La Quinta Inns and Suites takes care of everything so you can take care of business. Book now at LQ.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-LQ. Good news for flyers. Falling oil prices have led to lower ticket prices, but if you have your doubts, you're justified. Travel expert Christopher Elliott says, growing airline fees are eating into ticket savings. Chris, set this up.
So this year, the average cost of an airline ticket is going to be around $379. That's the business travel fare. So if you're flying for leisure, it's going to probably be a little bit less. And that's compared to $392. That was the average fare a year ago. So that's great news. The problem is we're not going to actually be paying less money for our airline tickets.
All right. And the reason is why?
Well, because airlines have done something very clever. Every year they raise their fees. So fees for checked luggage, fees for things like preferred boarding, meals, change fees. Those have all gone up and continue to go up. Worst probably is for checked luggage. So the net effect, according to a new survey, is that we're actually probably going to be paying the same amount as we were last year and maybe even a little bit more.
Wow. All right. So and just kind of thinking out loud with the math here, it doesn't really match up when it comes to fuel costs either, does it? I mean, fuel is down a lot, and it doesn't seem like airfare necessarily is down, I don't know, you know, somewhat of a proportionate or comparable amount when it comes to maybe just the fuel price of a ticket.
No, not at all. In fact, what you have to do is, you know, the old saying, follow the money. You got to follow the money. Look at how much money the airlines are earning. They just started reporting their latest quarterly profits, and they keep having to revise their profit estimates upward because they're making so much money. So what they're really doing is taking the money that they would have, they should have probably passed along to their consumers, and they're keeping their fares high and earning lots and lots of money. So, of course, this is not going over very well with many passengers.
Right. We're speaking with Chris Elliott, travel expert, consumer advocate, author of a book called How to Be the World's Smartest Traveler. And we're talking about, well, yeah, airfares are falling, but there's a reason it doesn't feel that way, and that's because of fees. What else is left to charge a fee for, by the way? Are they just hiking the ones that are now in existence?
They're hiking the ones that are in existence. They're adding new fees. One of the cleverest ways that they're adding fees is by further restricting the terms on some of their tickets. So they're getting you, in very smart ways. In fact, you may even be thinking that you're paying less money, but over the long term, if say your plans change or you have to add an extra bag, you're going to be paying much more than you were before.
Yeah, airlines are good like that. Thanks, Chris. Travel expert Christopher Elliott. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, October 16. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Obama extends the war in Afghanistan. Malaysian authorities arrest a hacker accused of stealing U.S. military data and giving it to ISIS. Mudslides and flash flooding in northern L.A. If you get a chance, check out the video of the Stanford-UCLA football game last night, won by Stanford. The catch by the Cardinals' Francis Owusu. Wow. Mets edged the Dodgers in Game 5. It's Game 1 of the American League Championship Series tonight, Royals and Blue Jays, and a chat with football analyst Craig James in about 20 minutes. Expect political fireworks when the House Benghazi Committee next Thursday gets its long-awaited testimony from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who, as you know, is also running for the Democratic presidential nomination. Part of it will be fueled by allegations that the probe, which uncovered Mrs. Clinton's email scandal, is a partisan witch hunt. But Republicans have hunkered down instead of waging a public counteroffensive. More from Rachel Bade, Congress reporter at Politico. Rachel, where are we with this?
So we're about a week out from Secretary Clinton's testimony before the House Select Committee on Benghazi. Obviously, this is a panel that's run by Republicans. They've been investigating the attack on the U.S. consulate from 2012. And there's a whole reason that, you know, her controversial email situation came out in the first place. So a lot of Democrats and Clinton backers have been trying to discredit the committee for the past couple of months and have really cranked up the heat on the panel in the past 2 weeks. We saw the majority leader come out and say something about how the committee has hurt Hillary Clinton in the polls, sort of bragging about it on Fox News. And ever since then, Democrats have used that to try to say that the entire investigation of this situation is just a political circus to try to hurt Hillary Clinton and her bid for the White House. And so obviously the panel is pushing back on that a little bit, but they're not doing a huge counteroffensive right now. There's so much going on, so much negative press right now. A lot of editorials saying it's time to disband the committee, Democrats blasting the committee as a waste of money. And instead of seeing them sort of coming out right now and trying to really push back on this narrative, they're really focused on next week's hearing and trying to let their work speak for themselves, is what they're telling me. Their strategy, they told me, is, quote, tune it out.
We're speaking with Rachel Bade, Congress reporter at Politico. Her piece is entitled Benghazi GOP Hunkers Down After Barrage of Democratic Criticism. Got it. I did hear somebody say, I don't know, it was a commentator or something I read, that, well, of course, as political, every committee that's formed or every hearing is formed has some sort of political bend to it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. This is run by Republicans, right? So they have a certain point of view. Democrats obviously have a certain point of view. But in terms of, like, using that to discredit in any sort of investigation, I do think that the other side, oftentimes when an investigation is sort of centered at someone who is a favorite inside the party, a natural sort of defense mechanism, especially famous Clintons, is to discredit the other side. So that's what they're doing, is they're trying to make it seem like this whole thing is a political circus.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard for reporters. I know, speaking from my own experience, the panel has pushed back against this notion the whole time. They're saying it's not about Clinton. It's about trying to find out why we were in Libya, why the security needs weren't met, how did this happen in the first place. But as for the investigation, it's behind closed doors right now. All the interviews are behind closed doors. We don't get to see the transcripts. We get, you know, little leaks here and there to sort of fill us in on where things are. But in general, it's hard to substantiate where they are right now because everything is done behind closed doors and they won't say what's going on until the very end. And this is something that Trey Gowdy has said. He's a former federal prosecutor. He said real investigations are done like this. We don't leak. We don't say where we're at right now. But in the meantime, you know, this like opens up a whole window and door for Democrats to come in and whack them on the side of the head and say,
yeah,
look, they're not doing anything. They're wasting money. So they're pretty much going to lose no matter what they do, I think.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel Bade, Congress reporter at Politico. It's 21 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for our weekly look at what we've been searching for most online. We're joined live by Google Trends expert Nina Tyler. Good morning, Nina. The Democratic debate, right?
Yes, on Tuesday, Gordon, over 15 million people tuned in for the first Democratic debate, with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton really dominating searches. So people asked Google everything from the candidates' stances on issues to more about their personal lives, including their ages, information about their spouses, and things along those lines.
Why was Jennifer Lawrence making news?
Well, Jennifer Lawrence made headlines after publishing an essay about the gender pay gap in Hollywood, and her post really went viral and spurred national debate. We saw support from her American Hustle co-star Bradley Cooper, as well as other women in Hollywood really having her back, other women like Emma Watson, Elizabeth Banks, and Jessica Chastain, who took to social media to express their support for Jennifer Lawrence.
Well, does Jennifer think she makes too much money right now? Is that the problem?
No, actually just wanting equal pay between herself and her male co-stars.
And what's with Playboy now deciding to cover up?
That's right. Playboy made a big announcement that starting next year, the magazine will actually no longer feature nudity, stating that doing so is passé. The publication, they've had an iconic centerfold since their 1953 debut. So this is a real departure for them. And so some of the top questions that we saw, people wanting to know, is Playboy going out of business? What is Playboy thinking? Why is Playboy ending nudity? So people really wanting to know more since this is a departure from their 1953 debut.
We're speaking live this morning with Nina Tyler, Google Trends expert. All right, so finish up with this video of the cheetah cub and puppy friendship.
Oh my gosh, Gordon, if you haven't checked out this video, you must do so. The video tells tells the tale of how a cheetah cub and a lab puppy become the best of friends. At the Metro Richmond Zoo, Kumbali was a cheetah baby cub who was malnourished, and he needed a friend, so they paired him with Kago, who was a baby rescue pup for companionship. Right. These two are like siblings. It's a great video. It has over 2.2 million views on YouTube right now.
Very good. Hey, thanks for a few minutes as always, Nina. Google Trends expert Nina Tyler with us live. 15 minutes before the hour on This Morning.
Are you predictable? When was the last time you surprised someone with something totally unexpected? At ProFlowers, we think predictability is boring, so we're making it easy for you to be unpredictable by offering our best-selling 100 blooms for just $19.99. Plus, we're giving away a free glass vase with every order. But hurry, because this incredible deal ends this Friday. Go to ProFlowers.com, click on the blue radio microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code 5151. That's ProFlowers.com, secret code 5151.
Thanks for being with us. It's 10 minutes before the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Jordan, flash flooding sent water, mud, and rocks rushing across Interstate 5 north of Los Angeles yesterday afternoon, stranding hundreds of vehicles and closing the major north-south thoroughfare. Stranded driver Mike Martinez describes the scene.
Got back in our cars, and after that, we just started sliding. Boulders started coming, so it was just quick. It just happened quick. So it was scary.
The flooding about 75 miles north of downtown L.A. was part of a storm system that brought downpours across a wide swath of northern Los Angeles County. A second highway was closed last night following a separate mudslide. There are no reports of injuries. U.S. special operations analysts were gathering intelligence on an Afghan hospital days before it was destroyed by a U.S. military attack because they believed it was being used by a Pakistani operative to coordinate Taliban activity. The Pentagon initially said the attack on the Doctors Without Borders hospital that killed 22 was to protect U.S. troops engaged in a firefight and has since said it was a mistake. Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign now has more money in the bank than Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Ben Carson combined, according to data filed last night with the Federal Elections Commission. But her top rival for the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders, came within striking distance of her haul this quarter, reporting a three-day fundraising sprint worth $3 million after Tuesday night's presidential debate. Donald Trump and Ben Carson are both threatening to boycott the next Republican presidential debate if CNBC, which is hosting the event, and the Republican National Committee don't change the format. They're taking issue with CNBC's plans for a debate that doesn't include opening and closing statements and runs 2 hours plus up to another 16 minutes in commercial breaks. What keeps you up at night? If it's worries about government corruption, cyber terrorism, or terror attacks, you aren't alone. A new survey of America's top fears released by Chapman University also reveals that we're afraid of zombies, reptiles, and speaking in public, but not in the top 10, fear of death.
That's peculiar. I worry about some things. I don't worry about government corruption.
That was number one on their list. I don't either.
I don't understand that. Or zombies. No. 8 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. In a battle of top 20 teams in college football last night, number 15 Stanford outscored UCLA, ranked 18th, 56-35. Key marquee matchup this weekend, number 17 Iowa visits number 20 Northwestern. A college football update now from Craig James, former NFL player and analyst for ESPN, now hosting a podcast called Airing It Out with Craig James. It's under the same umbrella as this show, Compass Media Networks. Craig, what jumps out at this point of the season?
Well, I think there were a couple of teams that really have surprised me, Michigan being at the top of the list with Jim Harbaugh. And I had said throughout the offseason, I couldn't wait to see Jim Harbaugh back on the sidelines as a Michigan man. And Brady Hoke was a good guy and all that, but now we've got a true Michigan person that's running the helm there, and they played outstanding. And then the other one was Florida. Florida came from nowhere. Unfortunately for them this week, their quarterback, Will Grier, the reason that they finally started playing well again, has been suspended for the year because of performance-enhancing drugs, a violation there. So now Florida probably falls back to the pack.
Right. All right. And also during the past week, Steve Spurrier just kind of dropping everything at South Carolina. Was that disappointing? Was it a surprise? Are you okay with the decision? What?
Yeah, you know what, Gordon? I think because, I go back to my days even playing in the USFL when Steve was a coach with the Tampa Bay Bandits. I've always admired him and his honesty. He is a unique position right now in that he's 70 years old. He's the second winningest coach in the SEC history. He did the right thing because, as he said in his press conference, the cycle for coaching and the changes need to occur. Him moving on right now prevents the negative recruiting at South Carolina. He was going to move on, and so go ahead and get it out of the way so that South Carolina can start to rebuild and put the program back on its feet.
We're speaking with Craig James, former NFL player. He's an analyst and also a podcaster. It's called Airing It Out with Craig James. We're talking a little football. How come Michigan State in the AP poll after beating my Rutgers, I know only by a touchdown, drops three spots from 4 to 7 in the poll?
Yeah, and you know what, Gordon? I don't even, on my top teams to watch, I've got Baylor, TCU, LSU, Utah, and Ohio State. I don't even have Michigan State there.
Okay.
I think I'm really not. I'm lukewarm on Ohio State. I think I'm just giving them the helmet benefit of the doubt. They haven't played great.
Okay.
There's a few teams that are excellent, and there's several who are looking in, trying to make it to that top four consideration.
All right. So 6 games in, Craig, who'd you love to see? Just, you know, if you could just wave the magic wand, who'd you love to see square off this weekend?
This weekend, it would either be Baylor or TCU because of their offenses against probably LSU.
Okay.
Leonard Fournette, the sensational runner on the ground, probably the top Heisman guy right now. I'd like to see that kind of power in a football game.
Thanks, Craig. Craig James, the podcast is called Airing It Out with Craig James. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.